I've stopped drinking coffee.
Oh, congrats.
I guess. It's not like quitting, alcohol.
No, but coffee's still addictive and
Well,
it can be hard to break the habit, so well done.
I guess I do feel like it was fucking me up.
Well, you've complained about coffee a lot, so I'm not surprised.
I don't know if there's like, yeah, I don't know if there's a huge benefit to not drinking it, but
I suspect there is, because like people keep saying we shouldn't drink it, right?
oh, really?
Because it like apparently it can diabetes, like not diabetes, diuretic or whatever. It makes you poop.
It makes you poop.
It makes you poop.
I feel
Did
like
you
I.
not know that coffee makes you poop?
Well, I guess I kind of knew that. That's not really. I don't like. That's not the functionality that I associate with it the most. But yeah, I guess I do know that it makes you
So there's that.
poop.
People say that the caffeine can be bad for us. So if, like, coffee does a lot of caffeine, so it can be a lot, like it can be bad. It can throw off, from what I've heard, because of how coffee interacts with our brain, what ends up happening is it takes up the receptors, and if we don't drink it, then those receptors go without, and we feel the withdrawal and the cravings, and we want coffee, right? And it actually causes a greater level of tiredness than what you actually are because your body is jonesing for its caffeine.
What do you think about something called apple tarts with a Z?
That sounds like a weed strain.
Yeah, is that something you've come across?
Well, we've got applesauce, but applesauce is SAU. I think it's SAU apostrophe Z.
This shit. It's not even. It's
It's
22%.
apple tarts is totally, yeah, coming up as a strain. Okay.
It's like, yeah, it's 22.39%, but I bought a couple grams for $5 each, and yeah, it's
You got weak, dude. It's
doing
coming up
damage
on
to me.
one of our one of the websites we use up here to like look at different strains and what people are saying about them and stuff like that. As the apple tarts appear as a 26%, so you got it weak.
Oh, interesting. Well, it feels very strong to me, is kind of what I'm saying.
Yeah, fair enough. It's apparently it's a hybrid,
27
which
is
is
a
probably
lot.
why it's happening. If you've got if it's a hybrid, it's an apple fritter runs cross. So you're going to be getting a mix of sensations. You're going that could be why it feels like it's hitting harder. It's looking like it's supposed to be on the higher THC side, low leans more towards calming, but is fairly midline. And there the highlights are that it will give you a tingling, relaxed, and euphoric feelings, but it can cause some anxiety, headache, and dry mouth.
Well, I
Oh, it's a
don't.
myrcene heavy one. Okay.
Myrcene?
The terpenes in it are the primary terpenes are myrcene, pinene, and limonene, which just helps to describe what the flavor profile is going to be like, as well as
Okay.
what the smell is going to be like. And terpenes can also impact the kind of effects that the flower might have.
Okay.
So if you're going with a limonene heavy one, that's lemony flavored stuff, that tends to energize us and wake us up more. So your effects from the cannabis is going to be more in line with that. This is what happens when I hyperfixate on something. I learn
Well,
as much as I can, and I get really into it.
yeah, so today we're going to watch an episode called Errand of Mercy.
Ooh.
There are Klingons. I warn you, if you're frightened of Klingons,
I mean,
they will
original
appear.
series Klingons are not exactly something I would call horror defining.
They will not have fancy foreheads.
I honestly feel like the fancy foreheads ones are scarier. No, it's I don't remember the episode well. What was the blurb that I've got? War with Klingons declared. Kirk and his first officer Spock attempt to sway a comprehensively placid population of a planet. Alliteration. Wow. Near the Klingon border to resist an invading military occupation. Yeah, I don't remember this episode.
Yeah, I don't remember it at all. I think the only Klingons I remember from my childhood were in the movies and the Tribble episode. I almost said Trilobite.
I mean, that works too. It can be a trilobite, right?
If I said
That
the
can be.
trilobite episode, what would immediately come to mind?
Well, I mean, I would picture an actual trilobite,
Right.
but I'd still know what you meant. You know what I mean? Well, because there's only like one trill type episode in the original series, right? It's not like the trill were actually erased yet.
Sure.
So there's only
Yeah.
one option, right? Is where I'm coming from. Like there's only it
I'm
just well, it feels
No,
like it makes sense to get to there, you know?
that's fine. No, that makes sense. Yeah. I was trying to picture all of the weird bugs and things that resemble trilobites. The first thing that comes to mind is the season finale of the first season of TNG with the bluegill bugs that go into your neck. But there's some trilobite creatures floating around. There might have been, I don't recall exactly what the things look like in the, I think it's the season finale of this season, but there are some kind of blobby bug things floating around. But today we're talking about Klingons.
Oh, it's not trilobites this season. It's behavior altering parasites is the season finale
But that's what I'm
for
talking about.
yeah.
Anything that's even slightly ribbed or has feelers,
I
I
just don't
think
like
is close
bugs.
enough to a trilobite.
I just don't like bugs.
No?
I'm good with not having bugs, you know?
Oh, really?
Yeah, bugs are gross.
That's fine.
Everyone's got their thing. I don't like bugs.
Okay, I think they're kind of okay. There's some that I don't like. There's a Colorado potato beetle that I would like to stay off of my property.
Fair enough. I don't like anything like, well, I've talked about them before. We have house centipedes. I
Oh
don't like
God.
those.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, no, I've had to deal with those, and I would like and you know, you may notice that I didn't even mention those because I've never seen one in Connecticut, I don't think. Someone reported one in like an apartment complex that I lived in, very far away from here. So I feel safe from house centipede.
Yeah, house centipedes, spiders, anything that stings. I don't like bees or hornets or wasps or anything, and or even
Sure.
their mimics.
Yeah.
I don't like. I don't like things that fly near my head. I don't like things with too many legs. I don't like things that could hurt. Like I basically don't mind like ants, and even then, I don't like ants because they just get everywhere, you know? I don't like most bugs.
Yeah. I got a pretty yeah, I don't like ants are not allowed in the house either. But they're
Like, I'm
allowed in the
not.
yard. The
Yeah.
Colorado beetle is not allowed anywhere. I would banish that guy from the neighborhood or the state if I could.
Yeah, that's how I
May
feel about like spiders and house centipedes and other
Okay.
too many legged bugs. 8 legs is too many
Oh,
legs.
that oh, it is there. There is an upper limit, and once you hit eight, but it doesn't. Is it?
I have arachnophobia, so yes. I get creeped out by them a lot, and I actually like have had moments where I've broken down in tears, been unable to move because of spiders.
Is 100 legs better or worse than eight?
No,
Do they? They don't even have 100 centipedes.
but
They have like
millipedes do.
25 or something.
But millipedes do. Millipedes are
You don't
gross.
like I think millipedes are great.
A lot of them I'm fine with if they're
If
behind something where like I don't have to
they're in
touch them.
glass, okay, yeah, at the
Yeah.
zoo. Yeah,
Like
yeah.
I don't even like caterpillars.
I do not like any caterpillar.
You give me the
There's a
naked
there's
caterpillars and
there's a
I'm more
oh.
comfortable. But as soon as you
Oh,
put
a
like if you had
furry?
furry one,
Yeah, I don't
the
like them
furry one
naked or
set me off.
furry. Yeah.
I don't like that. I'm not big on worms.
There's a particular white butterfly that I would also banish from the yard. Worms depends. Worms, it
Worms
depends.
depends. Like I can't. I don't care if the worm is there, but I don't want to touch it. You know what I mean?
Worms trying to get into the food is
Yeah,
so
as
kind
long
of upsetting to me, but
Yeah.
I guess but because it's upsetting to me, I've learned exactly what to look out for and
Yeah,
what parts of the food to chop off and stuff.
I'm perfectly cool with like garden worms, especially as long as again, they aren't trying to like they aren't coming at me. If they're not touching me, go live. Same with slugs. The only bug I'm
I'm fine
actually
with
super
slugs.
comfortable with, the only one I'm super comfortable with, snails. I
Fine with snails.
love
Big
snails.
ups to snails. Snails can come and go as they please.
I will let snails crawl all over me. I am perfectly comfortable with snails. They are cute and they are sweet and I love them. But the rest of them can all just go to hell. No, they're all ugh.
I'm a little bit concerned about this, and this might be the beginning of a short story, but
okay.
There was a slug in my bathroom.
Weird.
Right. What? I'm worried if the point of entry involved the plumbing, that's pretty bad, but they don't really go underground. Yeah, I guess it could stick to a cat, right? Or the cat might even pick it up in its mouth.
I don't know if they pick it up in their mouth. I don't know if that's something that they look at and think of as possibly food. That's usually what they pick up, you know what I mean? But definitely could have just come in on them, like climbed on one of them, you know?
That would make sense, yeah. Basically, I'm worried that there's a route of entry for slugs into the house, which that...
No, I'm going to blame it on Prika.
That would be real bad.
Much as we love him, Prika's got the long fur, so he could have accidentally picked one up.
He does. Lots of things do stick to him, yeah.
Yeah, so just him walking past something, I can see him accidentally picking it up that way. And then now he's got it, you know? And now it's in your house when it fell off. Like, yeah. I can see that.
Okay, maybe that's what it was. Do you have facts about Errand of Mercy?
I do have facts about Errand of Mercy. Cool. I'm going to have to get new facts soon for season two, I've realized. But
and we're almost at four more. We're almost there.
Yeah, I'm realizing how badly I need to sit down and actually, like, you know, do my background research stuff that I usually do for the show, you know?
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, so Errand of Mercy.
Errand of Murphy.
Yeah. Fucking Murphy.
There's always Irish guys.
You're goddamn errands, man. this is directed by John. Wow, I would like to be able to read today. Errant of Mercy was directed by John Newland and written by Gene L. Coon, who we remember he did Devil in the Dark and a bunch of other stuff that we just like Gene L. Coon.
Sure.
Originally aired March 23rd of 1967 with an 8.1 out of 10 by IMDb.
Okie dokie.
Yeah. But no, I don't really remember this episode well.
Yeah, not at all.
I've looked at the little blurb and there's nothing. It does not spark anything.
Yep. It honestly looks like the kind of episode that, like, I certainly have not watched all of them. So.
Oh, I know I've watched all of the original series. This is why I keep being blown away by how badly I remember this stuff, you know?
We're just full of TV shows at this point. At this point, you've watched so many TV shows that the information is just overflowing.
Probably.
All right.
But Lower Decks tonight is going to be good.
Awesome, yeah. I'm excited to actually, like, kind of... Because it's one of those things that's just... It's on in the background all the time, so I don't even... So it all just turns into one big mush, kind of. I don't even know what happens in what season or... Yeah. Or even individual episodes. I just get bits and pieces as I'm coming and going.
Yeah, I'm mostly with Lower Decks. I've got, like, overarching ideas that they've crossed, like, they've touched on, and then watching the episodes, I'll be like, oh, I remember this one is this episode. I just don't remember when it happened, you know?
Yeah, it'll be good to get real high and just pay attention to it for once.
I don't think I've watched it well, really. Oh, no, I have. I just don't think I've actually paid attention when I've been really high. It's going to be good. We'll have fun.
All right, awesome.
But first, original series.
Episode 26 by Amazon's remastered. Oh, this isn't even the remastered count. It's just Amazon's count because there are three counts. Episode 26 by Paramount Plus's count, I should say. Errand of Mercy. I don't know why I had to say all of that. Let's watch it.
I've just told the chaos, and his response is yes. Ellipses. I think yes. Ellipses. Perhaps all caps. Fuck yes, with like four E's and six S's.
Wow, awesome. Hooray.
He's excited too.
Hello, and welcome once again to The Least Ready Room, a Star Trek about pot and podcasts. I'm Dave, that was Chris I was just talking to. We are often joined by my friends Saint and Weebs, and several other colorful characters. Let me just take a sip of water here. Got an itch in my throat today. I don't know why. I don't. I feel like I said that in an ominous kind of, you know, something like by the end of the episode, I'm going to reveal that the brain parasite from, they're not even brain parasites from, not the episode we're talking about. The one that we did mention with the gooey blobs that, yeah, what's that one called? I don't know. I don't recall. This one's called something about Klingons. An Arid of Mercy. Yeah. And a bunch of other people. I think I was in the middle of saying that a lot of people appear on this podcast, and I'm thankful to all of them. Let's talk about Errand of Mercy. We got three episodes left. I mean, four including this one. There will be three after this in this first season of The Least Ready Room, where we have covered the first season of the original series of Star Trek. And yeah, we did one bonus episode. There may be one or two more. I don't know. But we're wrapping up this season. Thank you for having had joined us. Here we go. I think we're going to talk to Saint first.
Another Gene L. Coon episode.
Yeah. We got a couple of Gene L. Coons this year.
Yeah. Responsible for a lot of the good back half of this. John Colicos is core. A little interesting to see these first Klingons be like, yeah, they're a military dictatorship. They're highly regimented. They're all part of a unit. They're surveilled all the time. It's not quite the Klingons we get by the
describe them as we know them.
They evolve. Yeah, they have what they evolve into. More space Vikings.
Barbarians. I surely don't recall in any episode of modern Star Trek Klingons executing 200 people at a time every 2 hours.
No, but that does kind of seem like the thing Klingons would do.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe, yeah. We, in modern Star Trek, we don't really see, like, the Klingon military, like, in
doing
full
the
force
empire,
doing military
doing, yeah, doing imperialistic empire shit. Because that is supposed to be what the Klingon Empire is. Like, they're supposed to have, like, a whole bunch of slave races that they don't let off their home planets or something like that, that just, you know, they're like, you guys make our warbirds and stuff so that we can go and blow stuff up and drink and eat gawk. Maybe sing some operas and we don't have to worry about, you know, the boring shit.
Yeah, nice golden mesh Klingon looking outfits. I'll tell you what, as far as the visual distinction, they looked like Klingons to me. They behaved like Klingons. Like, I could really, you know, slap some foreheads on these guys and I would have been like, oh man, these are nasty Klingons. You know, we get to know some pretty sympathetic Klingons when we're watching more modern stuff. And by modern, I do mean like the 90s. I'm really thinking about DS9.
Yeah,
that's
thinking
where
about
we see the most Klingons.
TNG and DS9, yeah, obviously. There's some real shithead Klingons in those shows, though, too.
Yeah, there are some assholes, really, especially in DS9. I mean, there's a whole, we do see, like, I mean, we don't really... But the Klingons go to war with Cardassia, like in DS9. There's a whole like season or so of like that arc, and we don't really.
It's not the main thrust of the show. It's not like it's Deep Space Nine, not Klingon
Adventures
War.
But also, we never like Worf is not involved, so it's like, and it doesn't like the Klingon Cardassian War doesn't really involve the station too much. So it's like it's never really in the forefront of any plot line. It's just something that's happening.
Right, it's a very important background element because it's like, well, Cardassia is just right over there from where we are anyway.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. We see a lot of Kleons being assholes.
Yeah.
These are pretty bad ones.
Yeah, but again, they're not like space Vikings yet. They're more like space USSR. I mean, eventually, that's what people talk about in, you know, TOS, is that eventually it's like, oh, the Federation and the Klingon conflict is sort of like a metaphor for the U.S. Soviet conflict, Cold War. Probably nobody was thinking about that at the time when this was written. I'm sure this was written as a one-off and people were like, Klingons,
Yeah. Those
guys are cool. Bring them back for another episode. Bring them back for a few more episodes.
And then it rolled like a snowball.
Yeah. Until there's the whole fucking dictionary of Klingon. Now.
That's funny. That was such a like... You remember seeing, like, in the newspaper, it would be like, professor at this university teaches course in Klingon. Oh, my God. It was a big deal in the 90s that someone wrote a Klingon language.
I had a Klingon language dictionary. I had the Klingon language dictionary for real.
No longer?
No, I can't find it anymore. I don't know what happened to it.
Do you recall any kind of anecdote involving the guy that developed the Klingon language or something like that? He definitely has done that for other shows and stuff, but I feel like there's something particular.
Yeah, well, there's a special, you know, they call it Conlang, you know, constructed languages.
Oh, yeah.
Klingon just happens to be like one of the, you know, older, more famous ones.
Okay. Oh, he may have done Dothraki or something like that. That might be what I was thinking about this particular guy.
Wouldn't be surprised.
But yeah, Dothraki, same kind of thing.
Yeah, or like, you know, Tolkien obviously was the other big guy.
Yeah. Does he have like any whole languages or whole sections?
Yeah, Elvish.
Like Elvish does exist as a language, basically. You can
Elvish is like an entire, like, complicated language, yeah. Tolkien was the OG for Conlang. I mean, as far as, like, relatively modern stuff goes, I don't know if people were doing this kind of thing, like, in the 1700s or whatever for fun.
Yeah. No, Frankenstein doesn't speak in an invented language.
But yeah, fucking Klingon.
Yeah, there's some Klingons. There they were. That was, yeah. I mean, it's,
They're doing some brutal Klingon shit. They're like, you are now the regimented slave labor for our empire.
Yep.
Get working. Get to the mines.
This is what we were doing before all that messing around with the Genesis planet and then our empire collapsing.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're really, in a lot of ways, they are very much like the Klingons that, you know, I would expect. But they got a long way to go.
Yeah, it's all pretty shallow right now. And again, it's like this was written, I'm sure, with like any expectation of like, are we going to do a military episode?
Yeah, I mean, as a matter of fact, this episode really is about the Organians. And they were like, we just have to have an enemy. Let's have some enemy in golden mesh suits.
It's about the Federation, too, because then, you know, at the end, Kirk realizes...
Oh, yeah, they're both, yeah.
Good like, message like, in this one. He's like, I'm embarrassed. He's like, I was being just as violent as the Klingons, and here are the Organians, who I was acting like, you guys won't even lift a finger to defend yourselves, blah, 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 blah. Yeah. And I realized, like, no, I really didn't understand what the hell was going on, and I was making some assumptions, and I was wrong.
Kirk and Kor were basically on the same side at the end. They were about to team up to fight these old bozos. Hothead Kirk ass.
Yeah. Until the Organians are like we know this Klingon dude really loves murdering tons of people, but you Federation guys are supposed to be egalitarian and peaceful. What's up?
Just blew up all kinds of shit right outside.
All right. Like, Like, right after this guy told him, like, by the way, if anything happens, like, one Klingon soldier dies, I'm going to massacre thousands of Organians.
He
like,
said that right in front of Kirk.
Right, he said it to Kirk's face. What did Kirk think was going to happen from blowing up a munitions dump? Of course he's going to get people killed in reprisals, because he's literally said that's what's going to happen. He's like, anything that happens, it's going to involve reprisal. It's going to involve me lining up a bunch of people against a wall. You know?
If those 200 people had actually been killed, it would have been Kirk's fault.
Yeah. I mean, kind of, but like, it's really the Klingon's fault ultimately.
Yeah, okay.
But still, it's like, you're going to do that. You're going to be like, okay, yeah, I'm okay with getting a bunch of innocent people killed. I'm like, maybe not super okay with it, but I'm like, I'm okay enough with it to go ahead anyway.
That facial hair on Kor was pretty Klingon, as I imagine Klingons.
Oh, yeah.
He had the split sort of mustache and little goatee and just the thin. And also, like, yeah, they had funny pointy eyebrows a little bit. Not exactly like the Vulcans. And he actually, there was a lot of weird. When you got a real close-up of Kor's face, he did have a lot of makeup on his face to make his face look kind of rough and ridgy. So, not exactly the forehead ridges, but it was like, there was a lot going on to... You know,
there was a lot going on. I'm joking, works. like, haha, dudes in blackface.
Yeah,
but like, I think they were trying to do something like a little bit better than just.
I almost like, feel like they were supposed to look like kind of bronze. You know, like almost metallic. I thought they were supposed to kind of look.
Yeah, maybe.
To go with their golden uniforms, these metal man, these metal army men.
Yeah, that golden sash made it to the TNG era, man.
Yeah, man, totally. That was the most Klingon thing in the episode, was the golden sash.
Yeah.
If that guy is like a slave commander of a whole planet, what is Worf doing wearing one of those?
I thought it was something you could wear as like the head of your house or something like that.
Oh,
or
okay.
Like,
yeah, I mean, I really don't know what it is.
And Worf's TNG. Worf's got a very small house, but he is the head of his household or something like that, I think. I forget. Yeah, he doesn't wear that sash like in the early episodes.
Right, yeah, he doesn't. Yeah, does he? I think he might get it in season two when they give Riker a beard. I could be wrong. I could be totally wrong. But I can definitely picture him in a yellow uniform without the sash in like season one.
Tell me, Google, what is Worf's sash? Metal says a family emblem that many in Klingons and TOS also had. It was where he held his family crest of the House of Moch. Martok gave him the crest of the House of Martok crest for the sash when he had Worf join his house.
Ah, yes.
This is what the sash is for. Okay, yeah, so it's a family... It's like a family tabard. It's like Game of Thrones where they all got their house symbol. The baldric that Worf wore at the beginning of the Star Trek The Next Generation is reported to be the same prop that was worn by the actress playing Kang and Kor on the original series 20 years earlier.
Whoa. We might see Kang and Kor.
Yeah, we'll see. Well, we just saw... Yeah.
Oh,
during the production of... TNG. Yeah, during the production of TNG, that prop was stolen, so Worf got a new one. Batman just changed the uniform color. Oh, right. That's right. He had the red... I'm seeing pictures of it now. He had red outfit with the yellow sash, and then later on he's got the yellow outfit and he's got the silver sash. Or like the metallic sash. Like silver metallic.
Okay.
You remember that? Yeah. But yeah, those are Klingon like noble family like sashes. That's why not everyone wears them. But Worf's technically a noble of the House of Moch.
Man. Moch. He's such a jerk.
Og.
He breaks his spine and tells Riker to kill him.
I forget that. I didn't remember that.
Oh, man. He goes on vacation and joins a group of extremists that think everyone on vacation is getting soft and they should cancel vacation. And he blows up the weather machine that's
making sure everyone has a nice vacation. So it rains all week and everyone has a terrible vacation. I'm not kidding. That is a DS9 episode.
That's hilarious.
It's insane. It's like the worst. It's like Worf at his worst. It's almost like, it's almost too much. It's almost like, I'm not going to say it's poorly written or anything like that, but like, it's like,
and it'd be interpreted as like Worf is having like a mental breakdown and
yes,
and takes like, it out on the weather machine and everybody else.
It's that sort of, you know, he's got this snowball of this trope of like so stoic and so honorable, and this is not how Klingons behave, and just Klingon stuff. And there's even like, I'm not sure when, but there's some scene where somebody actually says, I think maybe to him, maybe behind his back, like he has no idea what real Klingons behave like. It's, they're not like this at all. Klingons are allowed to have fun, but this is like at his most ridiculously rigid, ruining everyone's vacation. It's insane.
Yeah. No, I remember talking about that too, because I definitely remember a specific scene where I think it's, like I said, the episode, it's whatever season where he leaves the Enterprise to go
be a
Klingon commander.
Mm-hmm.
From Martok.
On a Klingon ship. Yeah.
On a Klingon ship. And he's trying to talk to somebody about, like, you know, weapons systems or, you know, ship maintenance or something. And they're like, oh, shut up and just get drunk.
Yeah.
You were ruined. Like they were like, they're basically like, you're hardening my buzz, man. I'm trying to get wasted here.
This is a shut up. Man. And
this is, it's like, I don't even think they're on the ship. They're like in dry dock or something at a bar.
Yeah.
And this guy is like, do not bother me with this right now. And it's just, that's just Worf. Worf's got to stick up his butt. He's extremely...
Really, yeah. Really complex character. The character's insanely entertaining. But when the whole plot line starts revolving around the fact that he just is going to be stubborn about something, it really starts annoying me.
It's... You can tell the writers were having a tough time. They're like, we've been doing this for 4 or 5 seasons now, and we're up to 100-some-odd episodes, and we're starting to run out of ideas.
All right, we gotta have a scene with Worf in it. What's Worf gonna say? Oh, he doesn't like what's going on. Of course he doesn't. Okay.
Yeah.
God damn it.
God damn. Yeah. Cool. But yeah, I also know this whole Treaty of Organia is also like a thing. This is why the Federation and the Klingons are not at war for the rest of the TOS era.
Oh, they had to be like, okay, well,
because the Organians told them to sit down and shut up.
Yeah, that's basically, yeah. That's what happened with the, that's how the the Federation of like, War came to an end.
And they're like, we have asked you repeatedly to shut the hell up, and you have not listened to us, so now we've all made all your weapons extremely hot.
That's such a great tactic.
Yeah.
Everyone's weapons are burning their hands. That's hysterical. It's like, it's very funny.
And when they just try to resort to like hand to hand, they get like electric shocks from like touching each other.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, this episode is about the Organians.
It is.
The Klingons just happen to be here and are, you know, nasty.
Yeah. Yeah.
Very villainous guys.
It could have been any number of nasty, villainous alien types that are, you know, all about, you know, invading people and enslaving them and committing mass reprisals like the Romulans with the Quorum or whatever.
I feel like as we move forward, we're starting to encounter more like, I may just be getting comfortable now that the Klingons and the Romulans are here, but I feel like we're starting to meet more like whole races that have not been established in the show, but are like established, you know, areas of the galaxy or other established empires, like Yeah, maybe it's just the Klingons and the Romulans are here now, but I feel like, you know, we've seen a few planets that have entire populations now.
Right. Well, because the very typical episodes of TOS so far have been about them encountering either primitive cultures or sort of very isolated groups, like you said, three guys on an icy moon or something.
They are they're what have they set out to do, these guys? Discover
new worlds,
strange new worlds, and
seek out new life,
civilizations. And new civilizations. Right? Yeah. I cannot believe that isn't just like burned into the front of my brain. Like I can't believe I don't have that on cue.
Exactly. Like that. It's supposed to be about that, not about them fighting wars.
That's what we're doing in the show. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean that's the thing too. Like when DS9 came around and they were like, "Let's actually show a war," it was like, "Whoa."
Yeah, what about worlds and new civilizations? What happened to that?
Yeah.
We got some of that, but
we're sitting here. Yeah. It's like they had a little bit of that. They're like, okay, fine. You can have some new worlds and new civilizations. There's a wormhole right there.
There's a ship. We'll make Sisko the captain.
He'll be able to get off the station wherever he wants and go for a drive.
Yeah, I don't think him being promoted to captain actually occurred like on the show. Like he was not Captain Sisko for like two seasons.
No, he was commander in the first.
Yeah, right. Yeah, that's it.
Yeah.
Another cool guy.
What else about this episode? Yeah, these Organians just giving these guys these smiles like, you guys with your stupid little wars and your stupid games.
Bros with phasers coming by again.
Like, can you just honestly, like, he's just trying to tell Kirk, like, he doesn't want to reveal to Kirk, like, actually, we're energy beings and we don't care. And when the Klingons show up, we're all just going to vanish.
Right.
And they're not going to enslave us because we don't do anything that we don't want to do.
Yeah, like, explain ourselves to you, you bozo.
Like, exactly. So will you get your stupid asses out of here? Go away.
We'll keep you safe, but, like, Jesus, you guys are such assholes.
You guys are such dickheads. Like, Kirk, Spock, like, I thought you guys were dedicated to, like, peace and democracy. Well,
you're like, we gotta blow these guys
out. All of us Organians here are voting to not do anything about the Klingons invading us. So can you just leave us be? And they were like, no, gotta fight the Klingons.
The Klingons in this episode have a mind ripper.
A mind sifter. But if you turn it up high enough, it's a mind ripper. Doesn't work on Spock, though.
Nope, his brain is too complexly Vulcan. He's got three times the strength of a man and three times the mental capacity to resist mind rippers.
Yeah.
General Vulcan characteristics.
Yeah.
Spock's outfit is great here.
He's got an awesome like little half cloak. It's great. And
they dress him up like a merchant.
Yeah. And I totally noticed like halfway through the episode, I'm like, even though Kirk and Spock are wearing disguises, Kirk is still wearing that same mustard yellow color and Spock is still wearing blue.
Under his little cape.
Under his little red, jaunty little red cape.
It's a pretty good episode. I feel like we've seen energy beings and advanced ancient civilizations, and we've even seen civilizations that appear to be stagnant.
Yeah.
Before. So, I mean, yeah. And we've also seen a couple other civilizations here and there that are simply hundreds of years advanced, you know, beyond where Starfleet is and just kind of don't care that Starfleet is hanging around. So I feel like the Organians are like they're like a final boss of a lot of those types of civilizations we've met so far.
Yes.
These guys are almost Q. These guys are basically there.
Yeah. And
yo, what if the Q continuum was not one thing, but a bunch of advanced civilizations that had to merge together to escape this, you know, corporeal reality or whatever.
That's probably what it is.
That makes sense, because it seems like there's a lot of people hanging out pretending to be Q in this era.
Yeah, there are so many godlike energy beings floating around in the ether. Yeah.
Yeah. Errand of Mercy. Pretty good.
Errand of Mercy.
I think, yeah.
More like Errand of Sabotage.
Yeah.
Yeah, Kirk was, I definitely felt like Kirk was definitely doing some gunboat diplomacy there. He's like, you better let us protect you or else.
Yeah, from the Argadian's perspective, like, neither of these, you know. Kirk's not coming down and threatening to execute people, but, like, he's still not, like, not being great about it.
No, he really isn't. He really isn't being that great about it.
He's in a rush. But he also knows that a bunch of fucking militarized Klingons are coming to murder people with powerful weapons, so... He's under an extreme amount of pressure.
He doesn't understand the Organians are just, you know, they're like, no one's actually going to die, dude. It's fine.
They could have just explained that.
They could have explained that, but then they knew the Federation was going to come back and poke their nose and be like, "Yo, what's up, my million-year-old energy bros? You want to tell us about your super science? You want to tell us about your psychic magic? You want to tell us?" And the Organians would be like, "Fuck. Leave us alone. You're gonna use that shit for evil." Leave us alone. Leave us on our planet and stop making lots of phaser noises up above. Okay.
Also, if they create enough of a situation if they don't explain themselves and they let this whole thing linger on, eventually fleets show up and they get to be like, fuck you, all of y'all.
Yeah, exactly. Now it's worse because they had to fucking step in front of thousands of people and force everybody to, like, and he's like, by the way, I'm also translocating to the Klingon homeworld and to the Federation homeworld, and I'm telling everybody there the same shit too.
Oh, is that what happened in the...
Yeah.
The Treaty of Organia or whatever?
Yeah.
Wow.
Pretty much.
Oh, man, he fucking told on him.
Yeah.
I'm going to go tell both of your planets how you all are behaving out here. That rules. I love that. That's a great tidbit.
Yeah, this dude is like basically like, listen, I'm the god of this sector, and I'm telling you guys to shut the fuck up and stop fighting. And he's like, and he also gives a little hint. He's like, one day in the far future, both your empires will be close friends.
Yeah.
And it's like, yay, that's true.
That's great. We get to see it.
Yeah. And I mean, I guess that's what they were thinking of when they gave Worf that same fucking sash from that character.
Man.
The same prop. They're, you know, they think of these things, man.
I love it.
That's what I'm telling you. What I've been saying for so long, when you watch, especially the TNG era, but also DS9 to a large degree, and Voyager to some degree, like, almost every single one of those episodes is just ripped off from TOS somewhere in some way, or points back to a TOS episode or something like that. It's a lot more explicit in, like, a show like The Lower Decks.
Oh, well, yeah, Lower Decks, that's the point.
Lower Decks is like, we're writing this to be self-referential. Like,
exactly, yeah.
Like, there's no point in watching The Lower Decks unless you've watched a lot of other Star Trek, I feel like. Yeah.
It's good. Yeah. I'll give it a 6.
I mean, I guess, you're going to give it a 6?
Yeah.
I'll give it a 7.
I've been giving out a lot of 8s and 9s, and that one was fine.
Yeah, I like that one just because it's still like
pretty good.
I think it's pretty good. I think it does a good job of depicting how both Kirk and Spock get really
hung up on their Starfleet.
Yeah, exactly. Like, really wrapped up in their own point of view.
Yep.
To the point where they're pretty much acting just like the Klingons.
Yeah, exactly.
But not admitting, and but you know, not admitting it. And you know, until you know, these Organians have to call them out in an extremely dramatic fashion. You know, they're yeah. like, we have been trying to tell you calmly for the entire episode to just cut out your bullshit, and you have not been listening to us. So now we have to slap the shit out of all of you.
So now no more bullshit. Now no one gets any bullshit.
Yes. You guys are all excited about having some wars. No wars for anyone.
Yeah, no.
That's it.
Now no one can have a war.
Great. Not even a little one. That's it. You're done. Cut off. Yep.
Oh, yeah, that's great. There's a lot of funny stuff about this one. There's a lot of funny stuff about Klingons in general. And Star Trek.
Yeah.
All right, man.
All right, man.
Yeah. Hope you're having a good week. Hope you have a good weekend. And,
thanks. You thank too. You.
Yeah. Talk to you real soon.
Later.
Peace.
Okay.
So we meet another Q-like race.
They really did like their overpowered, put humans in their place races in the season, like this series.
They also like ancient remnants of a society that, you know, there's like five guys left hanging around. That have, you know, moved on from there. Or whatever, or I've left behind some remnant of something. I was thinking about shore leave, which isn't exactly the same, but
no, but it's similar enough.
A lot of ancient, unfathomable, beyond human evolution kinds of guys going on in season one of TOS.
I think this one's my favorite of them so far because, like, they actually, it feels like a lot of them are there just to fuck with the crew kind of thing, right? Like a lot of these omnipotent beings, whereas these guys actually seem to genuinely just want to do good. And it's nice seeing that change with it, that, you know, with absolute power does not come absolute assholishness.
Yeah, these were good guys. Yeah, these were like good cues.
Yeah. And I like it.
They were being pretty good. So this one is about Kirk, well, the Enterprise is sent to check out this planet called Organia. And we, of course, have never heard of Klingons before, but suddenly we're at war with the Klingons, and they're the most deadly military force in the galaxy, and they're going to occupy this planet, and we got to make sure that that does not happen. Yeah, this is a battle over a strategic location.
Mm-hmm.
That's going on. And Kirk is like, me and Spock are going down there. Sulu, get the fuck out of here if the Klingons come. Which they do. But Kirk and Spock go to see the Organians, and the Organians are so bored. They're like, and it did. At first, it reminded me of the episode with the Celiac corporate, which is, we talked about it a little bit while we were watching it, but it's the episode where Data goes and he has to convince some people that they need to leave. But very different outcome. They were just people that, and they were just being assholes, the people that Data had to talk to. They were like, one guy keeps going, my grandfather died on that mountain and you'll never move me from my home. And Data's like, these guys are going to annihilate you from orbit. But yeah, there's some talk about the Klingons and war is their way of life, and these guys, these Organians, are just very placid about it, and they're like, well, there's not going to be any violence here. We think that this is all very silly, and I assure you we're all perfectly safe. So the Enterprise gets attacked, and Sulu flies off to get the rest of the fleet. The Klingon fleet and the Federation fleet are coming to have a big battle.
I do like the confidence, by the way, from the pacifist on the planet, who then we find out obviously at the end that they totally were right, that there isn't a fight gonna happen, but it's still it's good, like it's interesting to see it how yeah. they're just so confident that no, it doesn't matter what they do, like we're good.
Yeah, they're it's really interesting how it's kind of revealed slowly, because like one of the first hints we get is just, you know, the leaders of Organia are sitting on their council talking to Kirk and Spock, and one of them is saying like, there's this many ships and this many people have beamed down and we have this intel from here, here, and here. But, you know, even I guess in TOS you would expect him to have some console in front of him telling him that, so Kirk is like, how does he know that? And the leader guy is like, oh, he's very intuitive. They're so, you get the vibe that they got some kind of, they got some stuff going on. Yeah.
Like, I wasn't sure it was going to be a super tech thing or right. if it was going to be magical powers,
mm-hmm.
but it's clear that there's one or the other, right?
Well, it could be ghosts.
It could also be ghosts. Yeah.
The whole planet is haunted.
I would love, I don't know, is there a haunted planet episode?
A whole planet? Probably not. Maybe. There's certainly some stuff that I'm not too familiar with, but I don't know about ghosts other than...
I just think a holographic planet or something like that would be a really cool concept, you know?
Yeah.
Like where the planet is real, but all the people, like... Yeah, because we here are working on that sort of technology to have, like, holographic kiosk attendants and shit like that, right? Like, you see it in sci-fi all the time. So the idea that the whole planet is these semi-sentient holographic entities... that the tech has gotten to like EMH level where they look and vaguely act human, like it's close but something's a little bit off, and you can hint that there's a problem the whole episode by that, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
something like that feels like it'd be an interesting episode of Star Trek in general, you know?
Yeah, it would be. I feel like there's a few things that are close to that sort of thing. I feel like I got no specific example, but I definitely feel like there's some one or two situations where, you know, they're on a new planet and someone is like trying to talk to people and like the people are just kind of saying unrelated things like a kiosk would or like an NPC would, and the people are kind of ignoring the Enterprise crew or whichever crew it is. I feel like mm-hmm. that kind of thing happens from time to time, which is sort of along those kind of lines where we've got like, yeah, the people turn out to be some kind of, I mean, I'm almost, as a matter of fact, I'm starting to think there is an episode of DS9 that is an outpost and they turn out to all be holograms. That sounds more like a Voyager thing, but I almost think...
That sounds like a Voyager episode,
I'm starting to think that is a thing. There's some DS9 planet, but some DS9 episode where they go to a planet on the other side of the wormhole, I think. And I think it's ghosts. It's either ghosts or holograms of the people who used to live there. And there might be one... Sorry.
No, I was gonna say, I mean, like, this is, if it's DS9, like, this is classic Trek that I'm the weakest on. We've talked about this in the past.
Oh, sure.
Of all the 90s Trek, this is the one I've seen the least of, so it could easily be an episode that I never saw it. So I can't wait till we get to DS9.
Oh, man. Oh, I mean, and it's like, it's not gonna be too, that's early on in the whole mess of things, really.
Yeah, well, no, we've got this, we've got the animated series, we've got original series, and then we get DS9. Not original, sorry, TNG. And then DS9. It's going to be good. It's going to be fun.
DS9 is really great.
It's. I know why I didn't like it when I was younger and when it first came out.
Okay.
And it didn't feel like Star Trek, so I got pissy about it.
Yep, that's, but like, yeah.
I did like the reruns when I got to see them, like, years later, right? So...
Yeah, it's really good because it sits kind of outside the sort of general formula, because it is a different kind of Star Trek show.
And I mean, I did like I've always loved Kira and Bashir. I've heard really positive about the Taylor. I like Quark. I mean, what's not to like about Quark and you know, his whole family situation dynamic there, right? Like,
yeah,
there's some really solid on the show. I just didn't want to watch something like, it's Star Trek, why are we on a single space station instead of like flying around in space doing space stuff, you know?
Yeah, that's fair enough.
Yeah,
It was, and really, and at the time, it was definitely like, whoa, what are they doing now? What the fuck?
Mm-hmm. And, I mean, Voyager came out shortly thereafter and was doing space and space stuff, so, like...
Kind of a return to form, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And that, so I just latched onto that, and, I mean, Janeway was awesome. Who doesn't love a female Kirk who's a little bit more tempered and controlled?
That's what you think about Janeway?
She has moments that she's very Kirk-like. She's also got... But, like, it went from super diplomat feels from Picard back to something that felt more in line with Kirk, you know? Sure.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Completely unrelated to the show we watched today, though.
Something, another sort of major plot line that sort of, yeah, that kind of evaporates because of how this ends is that the Klingons have a truth-finding machine, which I've never heard of before.
I don't think I've ever heard of it since.
It has different force settings. Force 4 is enough to dissolve any pretense or something. I don't recall exactly what he says, but if you turn it up enough forces, it'll erase your mind while it, I guess it makes you tell the truth. I don't even know if they... Are they able? It almost sounds as he's described. We never see this. We never see it in action. Although, actually, no, they do use it on Spock, but off screen. But, yeah, I feel like when Kor is explaining it, I feel like he kind of infers that they get some kind of data readout of all of the contents of your brain, and then you turn into a vegetable. They used a safe setting on Spock, but Spock was, you know, a Vulcanian.
And didn't work on the Vulcanians.
Yeah. Yeah, he was able to lie to them. He was able to either feed them. It almost seems like, yeah, they didn't quite decide on how they were going to write it, so we don't see it happen. But it seems to me that Spock was just able to lie to them like they were interrogating him. So I don't know. I'm focusing on entirely the wrong thing because it really doesn't end up mattering. Oh, yeah.
Oh?
Well, I had almost forgot about the sequence where Kirk and Spock go on a little mission to do a terrorism.
Yeah, that was actually the part that I remembered the most from the episode. That was the most familiar part of that episode for me. Yeah.
You remember seeing it in the past?
Yeah, specifically that bit. Yeah.
Yeah, Kirk climbs the stairs and jumps a guy from 10 feet up, which was pretty great. And then they get a sonic grenade and blow up a bunch of stuff and
don't go nearly far enough away from the explosion to not be hit by it or not be clearly on at the scene of the crime.
Was it a 5-second fuse?
Six.
Okay. Yeah.
It was a countdown from six.
It looked like an extremely large explosion.
It was for 6 seconds of running away. It was way too big of an explosion for them not to get hurt.
So the Klingons are trying to figure out who blew up the munitions dump, and Kirk and Spock are hanging out with the bros, and the Klingons come in, and the bros were like, these guys did it, and that's James T. Kirk of the Starship Enterprise. And Kor, the Klingon commander, is like, oh boy, I've got an important hostage. We're gonna fry your mind with my mind device and get all of your information out of it. Oh, you know what? I almost wrote down, because last week we talked about how 50 deaths to the Horta was the highest body count we've heard about so far. Mm-hmm. And spoilers for this particular episode, the Klingons kill 200 civilians, but it turns out they weren't killed at all. They were just assuming their Q forms and floating away.
That makes me wonder, for our count, do we count that as them having killed 200 people? Because they didn't kill anybody.
The guy specifically says no one was killed. I think the final count is nobody.
Yeah, that's where I'm at. It's just a weird...
Their intended murders.
I mean, if we're counting attempted murders... Yeah. Well, no, we're still... Our highest episode is still that planet where they're doing virtual war and then just murdering each other.
Oh, right. Oh, yeah, actually. Yeah. Forgot about that one.
I don't blame you. That's awful.
So they're thrown in jail, and this is when I first started thinking about ghosts, because there's a whole thing about how the Qs snuck in to get Kirk out of jail, which is they threw him under the bus and sent him there. Kirk's like, what are you doing? They're like, we just can't have any violence, so why don't you come with us? And Kirk's like, well, where's the guards? Maybe they were out of phase? Maybe they, because the guards don't see them, they don't see the guards, but they walk out of the castle. It's Q magic. That's the kind you want. The kind that lets you say, it would be too complicated to write about what I'm doing, so I'm just going to do it. I'm not going to... Your puny human brain cannot... It. Yeah. Here's a mariachi band. Isn't that fun?
Ooh, look at the pretty colors. It feels so wrong. It's so true. And probably what happens.
There ends up being... there would be... Yeah. I mean, I'm... The fact that we don't see more guys from the Q, oh my God, the continuum. The fact that we don't see more guys popping up just to be in a mariachi band and to cause trouble is surprising to me.
Yeah, a little bit.
But the next thing we see is so the Klingons and the Federation get into an altercation. They pull out their weapons, and suddenly their weapons are 350 degrees and cannot be handled. And right about this time, the Klingon fleet and the Federation fleet have met up in orbit, and they can't even operate their ships because every control panel on the ships are 350 degrees. Also, excellent solution. I never even knew there was a war, and these guys have solved it. So that's the reveal. The guys are like, by the way, we've evolved so far that we are immaterial, we have no physical bodies, and we have Q magic, and... you guys go the fuck home because none of you can fly your ships. Which I guess
they turned the machine off because Kirk, we talked about it during the episode where they turned the machine off that stopped them from being able to touch them at some point during their whole exposition dump, because before the exposition dump, none of the combatants could actually physically touch each other. And then after, suddenly, as like the Klingon dude's about to go, you know, murder a bitch, Kirk just reaches out, grabs him, and he's fine, you know? So
I was confused about how that worked, because is the only... They say it, but we don't see any evidence of anyone being 350 degrees. So is it like, if you touch him, a blast of energy will occur, or...
The way that they talk about
it... Are they all cooking in their skins?
You're radiating a temperature of it. You yourself are not that temperature, but
you're projecting
the temperature out, yeah.
You're surrounded by 5 inches of 350-degree air.
Something like that, yeah.
But he does. He does touch that Klingon. Something great that these Qs say is that in the future, you and the Klingons will be fast friends and work together on your endeavors.
We kind of get there. Eventually.
Yeah, actually, I don't know if they're fast friends by the end of everything.
No, but... We're at least not like actively trying to murder each other, right? Like we've hit a nice alliance point.
It's like I feel like they start getting together, and then there's like, and again in DS9, there's a point where there's a whole. I think the Klingons, they were never in the Federation, but they break some kind of treaty, and they're at war with the Cardassians, but they're not down with the Federation. But then Worf becomes important, and we. Yeah, I don't know where we're at in Picard with the Klingons. In fact, I don't think we even see any until season 3. I could be wrong. But anyway.
Did you end up watching all of the newest season? I know you weren't super... Yeah.
Oh, no. Picard season 3 is the one. That's the one that's good. Season 2 is bad. Yeah.
Sorry, I just knew that you were jazzed about going into the most recent season, which is the final season. So I wasn't sure if you had ended up watching it all or not.
Yeah, and because... I mean, there's no way this can be a spoiler, but Picard season 3 has Worf and Geordi and the Doctor and, like, Data, everyone. You know, it's got the...
Yeah, I know.
Almost, okay, yeah. So that's why I was excited about it. And it's good. It's good to see all those guys. And Amanda Palmer?
That name sounds vaguely familiar, but I don't know who you're talking about.
You know Knives Out?
From the movie Knives Out?
Yeah.
Yeah, I know that movie, yeah.
Are you like, I mean, like, have you, because I'm going to, the old man, the guy that dies, the actor, I think is Christopher Plummer. He was in Star Trek 6.
Yeah, he was also, if I remember correctly, he was the Sound of Music. He was the father figure. Yeah, yeah. I think he's Canadian. He's Canadian or British. I can't remember which.
I think British, but I could be wrong. Do you know?
He's Canadian.
Oh, okay. Do you know Pulp Fiction?
I've seen Pulp Fiction once. I'm looking up his daughter now. Oh, I know her.
Yeah, I know who she is. She's in The Fisher King. Yeah, but she's in Pulp Fiction, and she's in season three of, she's the villain. She's a villainous changeling.
She's a really good villain.
Yeah.
I like her as a villain a lot.
Yeah, she can be scary as shit.
Yeah, no, she's really good for that.
Yeah. In the end of this one, Kirk learns an important lesson, because at the end, when they're fighting with the Qs, basically he and Kor are on the same side going, we have a right to fucking murder each other. Fuck off, Q. And then Kirk realizes what he's saying. And hopefully in the future they will be fast friends.
It's a good little episode. I like it.
I liked that ending scene very much with Kirk and Kor.
I think the ending was needed. I think I really needed to be there, yeah.
I don't know if there was... We certainly never... Yeah, I mean, we've never heard about this war before, and I don't know if it's like an official war, if someone declared war. I don't know the history of the Klingon War. Obviously, there was the war that happened before, like, the Discovery, or at the beginning of Discovery, which is before this. But, as far as TOS is concerned, we've never heard about a war. And now the war is over because we met the Q. So that's great. But I really like the dialogue, what they're saying in the ending about the fact that, you know, the Klingons and the Federation, at least as far as Kor and Kirk are concerned, are ready to fuck each other up. I don't want to take sides, but we know more about the human side of the whole affair. Obviously, the Klingons are militaristic, warmongering bad guys.
Yeah, they really make it very clear that they're supposed to be bad guys in this episode. And but we do not like them.
But in the end, we gotta realize that the things Kirk wants might be the same kind of horrible violence, and he's got to chill out. I like the episodes where the lesson is, Kirk, chill out for a sec.
It you know what it does is it really just shows how hopeful Star Trek has always tried to be, right?
Hey,
like day one. Like it's always been a show about like this peaceful perfection, this utopia, like, and even in the less modern stuff, like the stuff that doesn't quite hold the same ideals, they're still striving for that like kindness to everyone and better world than what we've got, right? So it just really helps to drive that home, which is nice. I like it. I think it's written well. I mean, it's Gene L. Coon, so I trust it's going to be written before I even start it. Yeah. Only a couple of like moments where it was really this is a weird choice that they have made. Overall, like even the choices and like direction and costume and stuff all made sense. Like
sure.
There wasn't a lot of why this. Like, you and I have had other episodes where it's like every other scene, what the fuck? But
yeah,
no, it was just solid. It was consistent. And I like the message, and I like that they really kind of embodied the goal of Star Trek in one episode so well.
Yeah, that's a very good take. I like that, because that really is a lot about what this show is about. Did I say 7? I'll give it a 7. Pretty sure I said 8. Oh, no, 6. Ah, whatever.
I'm going to give it an 8.
Nice. Yeah.
Yeah, I really like this episode a lot. And it just, I don't know, by the end of the episode, like, I feel more positive about the future, like, about the future and, like, next steps on things. Like, it actually inspires me to be in a better headspace, so.
All right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because when I talk about watching this episode, like I've said this before, but you know, I watched a bit of this like, you know, 5 years ago or something. And other than that, it was me as a child when this was on the television. So like, there's plenty of this stuff I'm sure I've just forgotten, but I do recall there being a lot of like I would think to myself, oh, this is going to be an episode with a lot of talking. And I'm sure I kind of glazed over, you know, at 5,
the episodes that were mostly people talking. And I kind of feel like this probably was one that I kind of didn't pay attention to at five.
No, but like looking at it with new eyes as an adult, it does read very different. And
yeah, totally.
There's a few episodes that really, I think the nuance and stuff about it, the writery words about it are really lost if you're under a certain age, a certain amount of life experience. Not even age, life experience.
Yeah, that's a better way to put it.
Yeah. Like there's just stuff that you've missed out on that you won't be able to connect with. But at an older age, looking back on it again, like it hits different. It hits very different now. I like it. I really like the episode though. I think it was solid.
Yeah, it's a good one. I love this show.
And it was very much a talky episode, you're right.
Yeah. They were definitely, and that's definitely how I thought of them at the time. I was like, oh man, this is going to be a talking episode. There's lots of talking.
They're talking about a
strategic defense point or some shit.
it makes me think of Fred Savage in the Princess Bride with is this a kissing scene? Like, I just feel like, oh, this is a talking episode.
It's like that.
It can be. But yeah. No, thank you very much for watching this with me.
Thanks for being here and talking and participating and everything, and making the show with me.
I'm so glad we're doing this. I'm just as excited now as I was when we did episode one, even though I don't act like an owl.
It's nice
to settle into the routine of it a bit, you know?
No, I love settling into a routine. I feel really great about getting back into a lot of things because after passing out for 2 weeks in August, I feel real good.
Year for you.
Great to exactly yeah. And I'm and yeah, so that's all. I'm over that hump and here we are. Let's do this.
Yeah, no. I'm all over it. next episode is the alternative factor.
Okay. I don't remember that either.
Well, it's only got a 5.7, so I think it might actually be our lowest rate of the season.
Well, okay.
Reality jumping madman is the main point.
Yeah. That sounds Q-ish too.
It does sound Q-ish, especially the madman part. But no, it is the lowest rated episode for this season, 100%.
Wow. Okay. Interesting.
So going from one of the best to one of the worst. Let's see how that goes.
All right. Cool.
Cool. Oh, and then we go. Yeah, we go from the worst to the best back to back. Because City on the Edge of Forever is one afterwards.
Man, and then only two more. One of which is Flying Bugs.
That's the last three episodes. We've got Reality Jumping Madman, which is the lowest rated in the season.
Oh.
Then The City on the Edge of Forever, which is the highest rated in the season. And then Operation Annihilate, Bugs, Everywhere Bugs.
My count is off because there was an episode zero, and I thought there were going to be 30 episodes, which there are, but it ends at 29.
It does, yeah.
Okay. All right.
But yeah, so
man, we're almost there. We gotta watch the worst episode next week. Yeah. I love that kind of shit.
It's gonna be so... I want it to be bad because it's cheesy, not actually, like, unwatchable. We'll see what it is, though.
I'm sure it's not gonna be unwatchable. But, I mean, that might be just me at this point.
I don't remember this one at all.
Yeah, no, I don't. So I don't remember reality-jumping madman, although that's the kind of thing that you would think I might remember.
It's the first Star Trek episode to deal with a parallel universe, so...
Ooh...
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. And it's not even Mirror Mirror. It's just some other parallel universe.
I thought Mirror Mirror was going to be like way earlier than it seems to be.
Yeah, it's not even in this season.
Yeah. All right. Well, we will see everyone next time then.
All right. Awesome. Thank you.
All right. Cheers, man.
Yeah, I'll talk to you tonight.
Yeah. Quick heads up. I just got my work schedule for next week, by the way.
Okay. Right. Thank you for listening to The Least Ready Room. Like you heard Chris saying, we've got three more episodes of this season, and we're gonna, get to them. The next episode is The Alternative Factor. The question of the week is gonna be, what, what do you think the anti-you is like? Do you think the anti-you would want to destroy you and perhaps
universe. It's going to be something like that. I'll post it on Discord. And you can come and talk to us on Discord and watch Lower Decks on Friday nights for probably the next couple of Fridays. That'll still be going on. And we're watching some other stuff, talking about some other stuff. But yeah, this is wrapping up. Season 3 of Maybe We'll Talk is wrapping up. That's the other podcast I do. We're going to be starting. We have a bunch of podcasts that we do. You can find more information about that on koyadk.tv, which is where you can find a link to that Discord and come and talk to us. Yeah, the question of the week last week, we will start doing this on a weekly basis. I mean, I want to get these three episodes out, and when we're going to take a little bit of a break, which is why we're watching Lower Decks right now, and get ready for season 2, which hopefully will come out on a weekly basis. I mean, we did pretty good with this season. It fell apart in the fall, as my life usually does. And hopefully I will be getting shit together in January, because yeah, it's just about December, and I'm gonna wrap all of this up and talk to everyone real soon, or next year, or whenever. Come talk to me on Discord. Goodbye.